Good evening, folks. I'm proud to call this special committee of the whole meeting to order. I kindly ask our clerk to recognize that all the aldermen are present this evening. We only have one item of business tonight, and that item is to consider the Milray Cyclery request to use the city parking lot adjacent to their building at 11 East State Street from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. this Wednesday, August 18, 2010.
So move.
Motion by Brown, seconded by Singer. We have a gentleman, Tyler James, who's with us tonight. He's representing the Milray Cyclery in case anyone has any questions for Mr. James. Interestingly enough, upon conclusion of this meeting, Mr. James is packing up his car and returning to the University of Illinois, where he is a junior studying finance and apparently is wanted by the police in the Tri-Cities. So, any questions for Mr. James? It's all self-explanatory in the memorandum the staff presented. So, Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think the young man should explain to us what this event is. We're glad to help him do a little advertising and bring a new product to town, but maybe the people in the TV land would like to know about what you're going to show us.
Come on up, Mr. James. And if you could, for the record, just state your name, spell your last name.
Tyler James, J-A-M as in Mary, E-S.
Rub your head and your stomach at the same time. There you go.
Do you want me to pat the stomach? Or?
That's what we do in Geneva. This isn't St. Charles, man. This is serious business.
That's right. Based on what the event was last year, essentially, the Specialized Bike Company, which is a brand that we carry at our shop, comes down and they have like a large trailer that I think, if I remember correctly from last year, would probably take up like 3 to 4 spots. And they set up a tent outside and they've got all their high-end road bikes and mountain bikes, like $8,000 to $10,000 bikes that anybody can come down and try out. And they have, I think last year they had 2 staff members that they send to just size up bikes and basically let people test ride bikes up and down the river trail there. And then at 5:30, they send out, we're doing a group ride out of the parking lot there, leaving at 5:30, and you know people can try out the bikes, and they stay till 7. So that's
generally what it is. Sounds exciting. Nothing a little bit less than $8,000 that I might be interested in?
You know what? Well, that's kind of the neat thing about the demo is that anybody can come try out those expensive bikes. It's usually not something that we carry in our store, something that's that high-end, but that's kind of the fun of it is anybody can come down and try those bikes out. So,
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Flanagan.
Sorry. I know you mentioned that you could try them out, but are they for sale also?
You know what? I think you have to go through the company to order the bikes. I don't know if they actually sell any that day, just because the group that comes actually travels around the country as like the demo team kind of thing.
And they don't take orders, or could they?
I think they do.
Okay.
And I think that would be something that would be run through our shop, but I don't think they actually sell anything out of the parking lot that day. I think it's more just, as I said, for demos and trying bikes out.
I just thought maybe the audience would like to know if they
absolutely.
Come there with
as
a
I said,
checkbook.
I'm not sure what it is this year, but I know from my experience last year being a part of it, they did not last year. But
thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else for Mr. James? We have a motion by Mr. Brown, a second by Mr. Singer. All in favor of the request, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Mr. James, go back to school.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck, Mr. James.
All aye.
Study hard, make your parents proud of you.
Will do.
ILL.
Aye and aye.
Ask you all.
Yeah, let's keep the
filthy line.
What was that? What was that, Hill?
What?
What was that?
Oh, that was a code.
Yeah. Sure it was, yeah. Good Lord. Well, thank God. Is there any other business for the committee meeting? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
Singer makes the motion. Piper makes the second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Meeting is adjourned. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's city council meeting, the regularly scheduled city council meeting, is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Ralph Dantino.
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Ray Pollock.
Here.
Robert Piper.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here.
You know, it's not often that we see Judy Carroll out with her husband, so it's only appropriate that we invite Mr. Carroll to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. Item 3A, ladies and gentlemen, is to proclaim November 2010 as Geneva Community Listening Month, in recognition of Geneva's 175th anniversary. I'm hoping that all of you have a copy of the proclamation that is being considered tonight. It should be in the packet. Okay, good. We have a special guest, Margaret Selakovich, who is with us this evening. Of course, we have the proclamation as well. I'll defer to the council if you want to hear Margaret first and then consider the proclamation. That sounds great. Margaret, the floor is yours. Welcome.
Is everybody listening? I'm here tonight to request that the City Council declare the month of November as Geneva Community Listening Month. And the reason for this request is that, as we all know, Geneva is celebrating its 175th anniversary. And as part of that celebration, the Geneva History Center has entered into a partnership with StoryCorps. And so what I'd like to briefly do tonight is explain to you what StoryCorps is and what I'm doing to get the word out to the community about how they can be part of Geneva's Community Listening Month through StoryCorps. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about StoryCorps first. StoryCorps is a nonprofit oral history project. And for those of you that listen to National Public Radio, it's a special series featured on National Public Radio's Morning Edition. StoryCorps is dedicated to collecting and preserving oral histories of everyday Americans. Its mission is to honor and celebrate one another's lives through listening. On November 1st through 4th, StoryCorps will visit the Geneva History Center to collect 24 interviews. And what they're going to do is they're going to set up their equipment in professionally. They're a very professional organization. Set up their equipment in the community room Monday through Thursday, and they're going to collect the 24 interviews. One half of the interviews will be reserved for invited guests, while the remaining interviews will be open to the public through an application process. And I've given you the application form, and I'll give you a little bit more information in a minute. The participants selected will have the opportunity to tell their Geneva stories and help celebrate Geneva's anniversary in a meaningful way. All the recordings that are done by StoryCorps, all digital and audio recordings that are done by StoryCorps, will be archived not only at the Geneva History Center, but also at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And so if you're interested in learning more information about StoryCorps, if you just go to StoryCorps.org, and they've got a great website, but if you go to Listen to Stories, they have 300 stories that are on there. They're not the 40-minute interviews. What they've done is they've taken selected stories and they've clipped them down to 2 or 3 minutes. And the stories are amazing. They run the gamut of topics. You'll find some of them to be, very funny, very lighthearted, and some of the more serious nature. But they're really excellent and fun stories to go listen to. So tonight what I want to do is not only tell you about StoryCorps, but I want to really get the community informed about how they can be part of the project. So I want to go back for a minute and tell you one more thing about StoryCorps, and that is everyone has a story, every story counts, and those stories should be recorded for future generations. What StoryCorps does is they really emphasize a conversation between two participants. That's really the heart of it, and that's where the community comes in. We need Geneva stories. And so if someone is interested in being part of the StoryCorps experience, they will need to pick up an application form at the Geneva History Center, or they can go to our website and download an application. And the form will explain, as you can see, it'll explain the project and it'll ask participants to briefly describe some of the stories or experiences they would like to share at the StoryCorps interview. The deadline to turn in an application is Friday, October 1st, and the selected stories will be determined by themes which will best meet the needs of future exhibitions and programs. So You'll probably notice that there's a limited number of interviews that we can do through StoryCorps. And so not everyone is going to be part of that process. However, community members can still participate in this event on their own and in another way, and that is through National Day of Listening. I know this is a lot of information, but it's important information to understand the whole process. National Day of Listening, StoryCorps has designated November 26th as National Day of Listening. And it's the day after Thanksgiving. And it's a day to set aside where families set aside a time to record and share their stories, the stories of their family, friend, and community members. And individuals who do this and are a part of the National Day of Listening and who record their own stories will have an opportunity to submit their stories to the Geneva Center Archives. So for those who are interested in learning more about StoryCorps and learning more about National Day of Listening and really thinking about sitting down with their loved ones and their family members and really preserving their stories for not only history's sake, but for their family's sake, I'm going to have a workshop on Tuesday, October 12th at 7 p.m. at the History Center. And it's going to be interested for individuals who want to learn how to conduct their own interviews. And we make it very simple. I'll walk them through how they can set up questions for interviews. I'll walk them through how to use the easiest way of recording equipment. And I'll use the StoryCorps do-it-yourself material. So it'll be an opportunity to help people feel a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more excited about the process. So what I've given you tonight is the StoryCorps application that I've given you. The first page is, a letter to the StoryCorps applicant. I promise I won't read that to you right now. But on the second page, there's frequently asked questions, and I want to make a couple comments about that. For people that are interested in doing an interview, because it's the StoryCorps interview is between two people. You've got an interviewer and an interviewee. So some people may say, well, who am I going to interview? Should it be a family member? You can interview anybody. It can be a relative, a friend, the guy at the coffee shop, anyone you choose. It could be a son asking his mother about her childhood and growing up in Geneva, an older family member who remembers stories from the past, a community member you would like to honor by listening to their story, or a couple reminiscing about their 50th wedding anniversary. You can interview anybody you want. Another frequently asked question, should I prepare for my interview? Absolutely. The more comfortable you feel about going into doing any type of oral history, the greatly improve the quality of your conversation. And so anytime someone does an oral history project before the interview, it's a good idea to create a list of questions and to ask and practice with your partner. However, the StoryCorps interview process are not meant to be rehearsed or read from notes. The questions are really meant to aid participants in the interview and kind of ask them, kind of prompt them. But the interview itself is really meant to be spontaneous and flexible. So that's information that I'll provide at my workshop. What kind of questions should you talk about? What kind of questions should you ask? I've given a set of ideas for questions that are listed on this sheet. One of them would be, do you know someone who has lived in your neighborhood or Geneva for a long time, and can you tell what it was like many years ago? Do you know any historic Geneva individuals? Some of our senior citizens can remember stories from when Colonel George Fabian was here. Some of our senior citizens may remember some stories about Harry Coltrap, Harry Coltrap being one of the longest reigning superintendents. He was a superintendent of the Geneva schools for 38 years. But the StoryCorps experience is not just for seniors. It's really meant to, cross the board. Everyone, like I said, everyone has a story. And I'm trying to get children involved, too, so that they may want to interview classroom teachers or grandparents or any people that they feel comfortable with in the community. Do you have any classic family Geneva stories? The stories can be lighthearted, such as jokes, songs, family traditions, courtship, recreation, and pets. And these are just a few of the many ideas for an interview. And probably the most important part of this is that We want stories that are unvarnished, sad, funny, wise, and most of all, very real. And when a lot of times when we think about oral history is not always about, you know, the best, you know, not always the best at facts and dates and sequencing events. I mean, you don't want to have oral history and have somebody come in and tell their whole life story. And you don't want them to go through each year. You want them to tell their story. I mean, we can go down to archives and we can pull the file out. But we want to hear that human element. And oral history is really a great way to capture the nuances of a situation and the feelings and the reactions of the people involved, and so that's what we're really looking for. And then the last page is the StoryCorps application, so you can take a look at that. And then I also gave you tonight a flyer that's going to go out to the community. And they'll go out to Geneva History Center membership, but it's not just for membership only. These flyers will be here at left a set for here at City Hall. We'll have them at the library. You know, people can come by the History Center to get more information. But when you look inside of the flyer, probably the one thing I want to point out is the special programs and events. You know, it's not just about having StoryCorps come and doing these oral histories. You know, we want to use these for future generations. We want to be able to use them in future exhibits, and we will have a lobby exhibit after StoryCorps leaves sometime in 2011. But along with those oral histories comes an important way to learn about our past. So you'll see that in that middle section on Thursday, September 9th. We have a professor coming from NIU who teaches oral history that's going to give us, discuss the importance of oral history and his work with StoryCorps. StoryCorps was actually out at NIU after the shooting several years ago, so he'll have some interesting feedback on that. We'll have a book discussion on October 7th. On October 12th is the National Day of Listening workshop that I mentioned. For those of you that are familiar with Rick Kogan, who is a senior writer for the Chicago Tribune, he was here when we did the Americans Who Tell the Truth exhibit. He'll be back again to talk about the works of Studs Terkel, who is the king of oral history. And Rick Kogan will also talk about his own Sidewalks column if you read the Tribune and look at that section. And then November 7th, a perspective from Lee Allen Jones. Lee Allen Jones is going to be here and speak at the high school after StoryCorps is here. And the founder of StoryCorps is a man by the name of David Isay. And StoryCorps was founded in the year 2003. But prior to that, in the 1990s, the parent organization was, they weren't doing oral histories, they were doing documentaries. And one of the documentaries that they did was with Lee Allen Jones. And Lee Allen Jones, at the age of 13, along with a friend of his at the age of 14, did a documentary with David Isay, and it was about growing up in the Ida B. Wells projects in Chicago. And the name of the documentary was called Ghetto Life 101, and it's an award-winning documentary. And Lee Allen's going to be here on that Sunday, November 7th, and hopefully I'll get some high school kids over there that take the urban studies class, because it'll give them an opportunity to hear his story when he was 13 and 14, when he was 13, growing up in the projects, and his work with David Isay with that documentary. And then I also always have to do a plug for the museum store. I don't mean to do that, but there are two books that we're going to be selling at the store, and that is Listening is an Act of Love and Mom, A Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps. So if you're looking for a book for Christmas or in 2011, I know that's a little far off, for Mother's Day, those are really excellent choices. And so I'll kind of end it with this, because really the goal of this whole project is really very simple, and that is we value history. And I think we can see that here in our community very much so, with the way we take care, we preserve, we conserve in our downtown area, how we value that history. But the goal is simple, and that's really to capture the stories of Geneva citizens from all walks of life and preserve their memories for generations to come. So if you have, if you know of somebody, if you have a story that you want to tell, you know, please give me a call or fill out the application form, or, you know, I'd really love to hear from you, and I look forward to that. So if anyone has a question, I'd be more than happy to answer it.
Any questions for Mrs. Selakovich? Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. This is wonderful, Margaret, because I know how passionate you've been about this and how long you've been working on it.
Oh,
and to get all those sponsors and have all these programs, that's really congratulations, because there's a lot of cool stuff in there.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of people that I'm sure you can't decide who to invite to be interviewed.
I know.
There's so many people that come to all of our minds right away.
Yes. Yes. Very
so
much
thank
so.
You.
Thank you.
Anybody Anyone else from the dais? Anyone ever heard StoryCorps? Anyone ever listen to NPR?
I do.
So do I. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I do. I think it's
incredible. The more that side of the room, up to you know.
Well, go to the StoryCorps website because there are some great stories. Or just start listen. If you listen to NPR on Friday mornings, is when they have the StoryCorps that they select for that particular week. And I've been working with the schools and did a teacher workshop with the teachers. And if nothing else, I've encouraged the teachers to take some of those stories and use it as a springboard into some of the units of study that they do at school. So it's a fun project. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We need a motion and a second to so proclaim November as Geneva Community Listening Month.
So moved.
Motion Second. By Hill, seconded by Vogelsberg. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Excellent. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Item 3B, as in boy, oh boy, is to listen with great attention because listening is an act of love, Dick.
Yes, it is.
We love having you here tonight.
Well, thank you.
Our Community Development Director, Dick Unch, is going to share with us some updates and insights and angles, if you will, regarding the Community Development Department. This, of course, is certainly edifying for us, but perhaps even more so for those watching at home. A lot of people are curious as to not only the breadth and depth of the work being done by the staff, but also the history and the looking forward, et cetera. So, Dick, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. To start out with, in your role where you're sitting as the committee of the whole, you're often looking at development applications that have gone through the development review process. And these are projects, either special use requests, they might be a subdivision plat, could be a PUD, it could be a rezoning. And these projects involve staff work and plan commission work. At a minimum, we're talking about 2.5 to 3 months of work, sometimes with projects that are particularly complex or particularly difficult. It can extend several months beyond that. So what I thought I'd do this evening is spend some time going through some of that work that takes place at the staff level and at the plan commission level and walk through some examples of that development review process work. So why don't we just get started? To start off with, the Community Development Department is broken down into two divisions, the Building Division and the Planning Division. The Building Division does building permit intake, plan reviews. They issue permits. They perform inspections during the construction process, and they do property maintenance code enforcement. The Planning Division does plan reviews, and these are reviews that are tied to both the Plan Commission and the Historic Preservation Commission. They also do long-range planning and special studies. Things like the downtown master plan that we're about to get started on. Whoops. What the heck did I do here?
Just click on the main screen. Click on the main screen.
There we go. And things like the teardown infill regulations and the research that we did in that area. We have a southeast planning area study that we hope to do this year. You've got the Historic Preservation Design Guidelines, the East 8th Street Corridor Design Guidelines. So we've got things that we do that are more of a long-range planning or special study nature. So Planning Division responsibilities. When it comes to plan commission cases that are reviewed at that body, we have provision of guidance to applicants. And this can take on many forms, but people are typically interested, they've got an idea in mind for a particular project, they want to understand the development process that they're going to use to get what they need in the way of approvals. They're usually in need of a lot of assistance in understanding what's required to be submitted in terms of documentation before we can actually hear the particular case. And they're always interested in how long it's going to take to get it done. Time is very important to the development applicants that we work with. Coordination of development staff reviews, another plan function, plan division function. And here I guess I would describe it as kind of an hourglass, where you've got the planning division at the neck of the hourglass, and at the top you've got the development team, the applicant team that's been assembled for the particular project. It might be just a simple property owner, or it might be a whole cast of characters that would involve the attorneys, the landscape architects, the civil engineers, the surveyors, all of the folks that make up the development team for that particular applicant.
Dick, is cast of characters, is that a technical term?
That is a technical term.
Okay,
yeah.
I've seen those in your memorandum. So.
And so we think of the planning division as sort of the neck in the hourglass. And the bottom part of the hourglass is the development staff, the plan commission, and ultimately the city council. And so you can also then kind of flip that whole thing around, because it's a two-way line of communication that gets established. But the planning division actually controls that flow of information and organizes it. We also have administration of zoning and subdivision ordinances, and there it's kind of the day-to-day workings of our staff, basically in answering questions, you know, like, can I do this on my particular property that I own? Can I put this on the property? What does it take to get a building permit? What about the site plan review process? What do I have to do with that? Can I subdivide my property? And the list goes on and on and on. So there's a regular flow of discussion and dialogue that we're engaged with daily with either prospective applicants or people that just have questions about city processes. The long-range planning and special studies I mentioned earlier, and, of course, in our role as the planning division staff, we function as a liaison to the Plan Commission. So we're involved in preparation leading up to Plan Commission meetings where cases are being heard, and we're also developing recommendations at the staff level for consideration by the Plan Commission. Plan Commission reviews, I've mentioned several of them here, plan unit developments, plats of subdivision, both preliminary and final, site plan reviews. Site plan reviews are done for all non-residential projects that are proposed involving a site development, that is an actual construction of buildings, parking, landscaped areas, that type of thing. And also for multifamily development, although we don't have that many multifamily developments proposed, site plan reviews involve that type of development as well. Special use permits, and special use permits are basically uses that are kind of an implied right in our zoning ordinance in each of the zoning districts, that before you establish those uses, a public hearing needs to be held, and ultimately the city council needs to approve that special use before a building permit can be issued or a change of use permit. Zoning ordinance text amendments are actual changes to the zoning ordinance text, and those can be proposed by the city council, by the plan commission, or by any citizen within the city. So it's really a broad opportunity there. Zoning map amendments can also be proposed by the Plan Commission and City Council, as well as by the property owner of a given property that's requesting the zoning change. We have comprehensive land use plans and amendments to those plans, and again, the special studies. The development staff, and I thought it appropriate to just list them all off here. The development staff is an interdepartmental team composed of representatives from each department in the city. There are 14 folks that sit on that committee, and these are the 14 individuals that are engaged in detailed review of each and every project that is reviewed by the Plan Commission and ultimately by the Committee of the Whole and the City Council. Additionally, I would add that we have a staff of engineers in the engineering division that are also directly engaged, and information flows through Pam Broviak and Dan Dingus at the development staff meetings from those engineers that are doing the technical review. Is this pipe size the right size? Is this invert correct? That type of thing. So there's really another level of technical expertise that is pulled into the development staff review process. And then the development staff functions. It meets twice a month on Mondays, every other Monday. And what that group does is reviews and discuss concept plans with prospective applicants. We review development plans for projects requiring plan commission, committee of whole, and city council review. And we also discuss approved development projects, code enforcement issues, and projects that deserve some special attention, either with respect to a problem that's occurred with implementation or a problem with construction. A number of different things can come up at the development staff meetings, and they're often meetings that last an hour and a half to 2 hours. Actually, sometimes a little longer. So the development staff concept review, what we do there is we try to collect some informal feedback for an applicant that's interested in receiving that feedback. Oftentimes, we're talking to applicants who want to advance a project, but they're uncertain as to whether or not this project is going to be approved by the city. They want to get a sense of what the staff thinks of the project, or they want to get a sense of what the plan commission thinks of the project. And from a staff perspective, what we typically do in these situations, we get material, whatever they'd like to share with us to explain their project, and then we'll distribute that out to our development staff. And what we'll do is, as a group, we'll do an initial review of the concept that's being advanced. The idea here is to give them a sense of what are some of the potential challenges that they face. What agencies do they have to be in contact with so that they understand the kind of the breadth of involvement that they're going to be engaged in. Oftentimes, we're involved in projects where IDOT and KDOT are sort of at the top of the list, because it becomes important for them to understand their access to their site, what those agencies will approve, and oftentimes it dictates what the plan of development is going to be because of constraints on access. We work with them to identify required applications. We outline the required application materials for almost every project that we do, particularly of a commercial nature. We're engaged in traffic studies, sometimes value impact studies. We discuss procedures, timelines, expectations of both applicant and staff. We work to get the applicant in a mode where they're responding quickly to us on staff written review comments that we provide on these projects, and we lay out those expectations so that they understand where they sit in the schedule once they submit plans. And, of course, dealing with questions. And I did mention that concept reviews are also available at the plan commission level. If they want to get a sense, if there's a policy question that's coming up where there's a question as to the appropriateness of a use for a particular piece of property or the appropriateness of the zoning for a particular piece of property, we don't get engaged in a public hearing, but the plan commission has an opportunity to just weigh in and provide a sense of what they're thinking. The application packet, then, is an important part of this initial work. It contains a number of items, information on the process, timelines, the actual application for project review, which is a simple two-page form. We've kept it simple over the years, and it's used for all the various types of development applications that are considered by the Plan Commission. The packet contains a public hearing schedule and application deadlines, and I'll show you a copy of that later. What's important for you to understand is that from the time that a development application is submitted to a point where the hearing or the meeting is held by the Plan Commission, there's an 8-week period of time between the two. So for 8 weeks, the staff is engaged in dialogue with the applicant on various aspects of that project. And those submittal deadlines as they relate to future plan commission meetings are very important. Sometimes applicants can make those deadlines. Other times, problems occur with some aspect of their project that requires either an additional iteration of plans to be submitted or just more discussion on some details where we're having problems getting code compliance, and so those plan commission dates can get pushed out beyond those 8 weeks, depending on just how the review process goes. Also, for public hearing items, instructions for mailing notice to property owners within 250 feet. That's a requirement for all public hearings. Specific plan requirements and checklists. We have a number of checklists that we use, both for the site plan content, the actual plan sheet that you get in your packet, landscape plan checklists, that type of thing. The special use standards, of course, we've talked about them before, but those are important as well, and they involve comp plan compliance, value impacts on surrounding property owners, traffic and parking impacts, access into the site, and impact on surrounding areas, the character of the area in terms of its the project's impact, use and development impacts on adjacent properties, utility and drainage impacts, code compliance overall with the city code, and exterior architectural compatibility with the surrounding properties. And then there's also a land use opinion application. The Kane DuPage Soil and Water Conservation District by state law is required to be applied to for that land use opinion, and they do a review of the soils on a site. So here's just a few pieces of the application for project review packet. This is the application itself, and it is just this two-page item. And you can see down in the lower part of this here are the various types of cases that you simply check off. And it's the applicant and the owner, and then various items that are required to be submitted with that particular type of request or application. Here's the Plan Commission public hearing schedule with the eight-week gap between the application deadline and the anticipated Plan Commission meeting date. Fee schedules, site plan reviews are done at no cost. Annexation agreements, there's a deposit together with a fee, and we use that as a debit account, so as charges for consultants or legal fees come into play, that deposit needs to be replenished. Subdivision PUD developments, both preliminaries and finals, you see the fees there, and most of these are $250 for each type of item. Stormwater review requires a $2,500 deposit, and that's because those typically involve extensive work from our stormwater management civil engineering consultant. Here's one of the site plan review checklists that I had mentioned earlier. Okay, so now we're going to take the application requirements and walk through a typical example, and this would be a special use request combined with a site plan review. So you've got the use permissibility aspect as well as a detailed development proposed for a site. So there's the application fee that's charged. There's a project narrative that the applicant is required to submit. It simply provides a description of what he intends to do with the property. We also require a response to the special use standards, that those nine special use standards that I just breezed through there. And the idea here is that the applicant has to demonstrate his project's compliance with the special use standards. Proof of ownership, a purchase agreement or authorization letter from the owner needs to be submitted with the application, so we're clear that the ownership is filing the application or is aware of the application. Plat of survey and legal description, a list of property owners within 250 feet for that mailing of the public notice, together with addressed and stamped envelopes to each of the property owners within that 250 feet. And then the specific plan documents include a site plan, landscape plan, tree preservation plan, building elevations or the side views of the building, lighting photometric plans for the parking and drive system on site, sign plan, and preliminary engineering plans, although we find most often that development applicants are very anxious to get to a building permit phase in the project. So what they'll do is they'll skip over preliminary engineering and go right to final engineering. And that's, I would say, I don't know, 75-80% of the time. That's what we see there. So our engineering staff becomes engaged in very detailed technical review of the project while that two-month period is going on. And, of course, the special studies and traffic impact analyses we're reaching a point where almost every commercial project we do has a traffic impact study that's performed by a traffic consultant. Okay, so that's the application, and we start the formal review process. The Planning Division staff routes documents to staff for review. We're getting 22 copies right now of everything for the 14 development staff members and the various engineers down in engineering. We also require electronic copies later on the process. And then a transmittal cover letter is put on the packet of plans that are circulated around to development staff just to provide some basic information. And the key there is to include a deadline of when we expect a response back so that we can prepare the recommendations for the plan commission later on. During the first review of that first packet, that's a process that takes about 4 weeks to complete. Staff conducts its review. During that time, there are two development staff meetings that are held that gives us opportunities to discuss collectively various aspects of the proposed project. If there are items that a consultant needs to look at, those items are forwarded to the consultant. And then our engineering division conducts what are known as site development review meetings. And this is an opportunity for the engineers and some of the other development staff members to get together and talk more about technical aspects of the proposed development. At the conclusion of that four-week period, the first review comment letter is sent to the applicant and the rest of his team. And these comment letters cover things like bulk zoning regulations, parking requirements, drive system geometrics, traffic impacts, access requirements as well, landscaping and tree preservation, the lighting, the sign standards, the adequacy of the utilities in terms of sanitary water, sewer, and electricity, the stormwater detention and retention and drainage. And this tends to be an item that we have to really focus on, because usually the reviews that we get back from our consulting engineers are very technical, and this often becomes a driver in the design of the project because of the land area that stormwater detention can sometimes consume, can change the layout of parking and buildings on a site. Erosion control, and then any public easements that are required. Then there's a second review that takes place 3 weeks after the first four-week review period. This second review is really a chance to look at how the applicant has responded to the initial set of staff review comments. There's a review comment letter that the applicant is required to submit, which lists off the staff comment from that first comment review and then their response. And that can be a narrative response, or if it needs to cross-reference to an amended plan, then it does that. And that's very important so that staff can work in a prompt fashion in doing these second reviews. So we determine if all the questions or comments have been addressed. There's one more development staff meeting discussion that takes place. We again route items to our traffic consultant or our stormwater management consultant for review. And also, if the project was in the historic district, this is the point in time when the application gets prepared for Historic Preservation Commission review. So at the conclusion of all of this, it's kind of where we end up with a development staff recommendation. And after that second review, we're notifying the applicant if the staff's recommendation is approval with conditions and revisions, or denial. If staff has outstanding concerns and is unable to recommend approval of a project with or without conditions, the applicant may continue to revise plans and resubmit for further review, which pushes out the plan commission meeting date further into the next month or later if necessary. Or the applicant can choose, because we are talking about a process here where they certainly have rights to proceed without the staff recommendation. So that applicant can go to a plan commission public hearing without a staff recommendation of approval, and can continue to pursue the project in the fashion that they had proposed it. Plan commission preparation. Planning division does the agendas, the notices that appear in the newspaper. We coordinate the signage that gets placed on properties. We do a detailed staff memorandum with a summary of the applicant's request, the staff analysis, and the staff recommendation. We also prepare draft findings of fact, We've asked for the applicant to prepare draft findings of fact on their special use request, but we also incorporate a set of draft findings in the Plan Commission's packet to help them basically formulate their finding of fact. They can choose to ignore them completely, or they can use them, or they can modify them. That gives them a starting point for preparing a finding, because all special use requests require a finding be made by the Plan Commission on those special use standards, as well as a recommendation on the project. Exhibits, photos, and visual aids, this has become more important in recent years, because everything that we receive from applicants is translated into electronic form. So we help them in advise them on the necessary visual aids that they need for their Plan Commission presentation. We assemble the paper packets that go out to the Plan Commissioners and distribute those packets. And then we provide assistance to the applicant on any presentation materials. So the first Plan Commission meeting, and this is a meeting where a public hearing is held, the applicant makes his presentation, basically makes his plea to the commission for his request. Testimony or questions from the audience are taken. There's an opportunity for cross-examination of the testimony or witnesses that appear during the public hearing. There's also an opportunity for the public to question and for the applicant to rebut comments made by the public. And then there are questions from the commission. And the public hearing is closed if all questions have been addressed, if the Plan Commission is satisfied with the depth and breadth of testimony and the information that they have. If they feel they have sufficient information to make a determination, they'll close the hearing. If not, they'll carry forward, continue that hearing to a future meeting date. Then there's a second meeting that takes place. The Plan Commission meetings are on the second Thursday of the month. The second meeting in the month, the fourth Thursday, is set aside for any questions of either staff or the applicant. It's also an opportunity for the Plan Commission to deliberate, to review the minutes from the public hearing meeting, to discuss their fact-finding, and to actually construct the finding of fact, and then to prepare their recommendation. There are times when a case may come before them, and back at this first meeting, they'll go through this, close the hearing, and they'll make the decision to waive rules. And rather than going to that second meeting 2 weeks later, if this looks like a straightforward matter, they'll just go ahead and act on it that evening and make their fact-finding and recommendation that night. And then, of course, the Committee of the Whole and City Council copied in all the Plan Commission materials. Minutes are forwarded. A memorandum is then sent out by the Plan Division staff to the Commission, and a draft resolution or ordinance is prepared, and a final resolution and ordinance is acted upon by the City Council. Then at that point, permit issuance plans are forwarded. They're approved by the City Council to the Building Division, and plans are routed to the Public Works Department for final engineering approval. And typically, final engineering does come after the City Council acts. Staff reviews for compliance with City Council approved plans, and if all is in sync, the permit is issued for the construction. And then I just mentioned some of the special projects earlier, but these are other special projects that the division works on occasionally. So that is a quick overview of the work that goes on by the Planning Division staff and the Plan Commission leading up to cases appearing before this body. Any questions?
Alderman Singer, then Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dick, the first review at 4 weeks, and then there's a second review after 3 weeks. Hold on a second. Let me get that here so I know what I'm referencing to. You mentioned that routine items that cannot be reviewed in-house are then left to the discretion of an outside consultant, like a traffic impact study as such. There is, I'm sure, a cost involved in that process, and who is responsible for absorbing that cost?
Well, here's how it works. We ask the applicant to prepare this traffic impact study, It's their cost to prepare the study. We work closely with them to develop a scope of work for that traffic study so that we get the right intersections and the right dynamics built into the scope so that we know that we're covering all the issues that might potentially come up on that particular site with respect to traffic management. Then the applicant goes out and prepares that traffic study, you know, on their dime. When we receive the traffic study, what we often do will then use our traffic consultant to review the traffic study done by the petitioner's consultant. And those are costs that are absorbed by the city, our traffic consultant that's reviewing their study. But the applicant prepares the traffic study.
Okay. Now this issue also appears not only in the first review at 4 weeks, but again here in the second review regarding the same issues. There seems to be redundancy there. Why is that?
It's really not redundancy. It's just that we find ourselves often, both in the first and second reviews, talking about traffic management issues. And so we just carry them over. It's not two separate studies.
Oh.
It's the same study, but we
okay.
tend to be talking about traffic management throughout the whole two-month-long process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Dick. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much, Mr. Runch, for your presentation. I just have the applicant, when the applicant submits a project, can the project go on for infinite or, you know, forever, or does it have a deadline? Do you give the applicant a deadline in order for the project to stop, or does it just keep on going forever and ever until they resolve it, or they just bow out? Or?
Well, there's kind of a sifting process that occurs. What I would say is that most of the time, we try to work closely at the concept review level,
okay.
so that we try to get a sense of where the applicant's at, and he tries to get a sense of where we're at in terms of a particular development that's proposed. We have had some projects that have lingered and gone on and on and on, but the applicant continues to show interest in doing the project.
So there's no real deadline? I mean, don't give them 2 years or?
We have designed this process to be a three-month process. That's how it's designed. And the first thing that our staff relates to applicants when we start talking about timelines and the process in general, just is that very thing, that if you do everything that you're supposed to do as an applicant and you respond to the staff comments and the code compliance issues that come up during the staff review, there's no reason why you can't make it through the process in a three-month period of time. Now, we have some applicants that they might have members on their team that are reluctant to follow code requirements or staff comments. And so then we do get engaged in a little bit of a tug of war that occurs if the feelings are strong about that particular aspect. But we have many applications that go through the process in 3 months.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, you bet.
Anyone else from the dais? Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Nice presentation, Dick.
Oh, thanks.
Very well done. Who is the traffic consultant now, or is that somebody who's hired from the outside?
Well, we have two firms that we use on the outside. Right now it's EEI Wills Burke Kelsey.
Okay.
That's who we've been using.
Interesting. Have you ever, I noticed in looking at the list of names of the folks that are on this committee. I forget the name of the committee, the original committee that meets.
Yeah, the development staff.
Development staff, thank mm-hmm. you. Several of them are residents of the city, and many of them are not. Have you ever considered at all trying to add any aldermen at all, one or two perhaps, to get that flavor? If it's appropriate,
well,
appointed by the mayor, I would presume.
haven't really considered that. I do think that the way we run the process, and of course you are getting a flow of information on the status of these projects as they are going through review. You're not, I mean, I tried to share with you some of the details here tonight of what goes on, but you don't see all of that typically. You know, our role here is one of providing professional advice and guidance to the applicants, to the commission, and to this body as they sit as a committee of the whole and city council. And so I guess I would say that that it might be a little premature to have the council sitting in on development staff meetings, and that it's really it's professional work done by you know, the staff that you've employed to provide these technical services. And at the same time, in the various status reports and updates that you receive from my department, we welcome comment from the alderman and the mayor. If there is a question or a concern about a particular project or development, or you want to know what's going on beyond the updates that we provide, that's why we're here, to you know, either answer questions or address concerns, you know, whatever it might be. And you know, by developing these recommendations at the staff level, which in turn then ripple through to the plan commission, which then in turn end up coming before the committee of the whole, I think that's an orderly and proper way to go about the review process.
I agree, and you've done a good job in giving us that information over the years. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. City Administrator McKittrick, you'd like to add something?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify and add to what Director Unsh had explained. Excuse me. We really look at it as a two-step process, where the first step is administrative. When we're looking at technical review using the policy and the regulatory tools that we have. The second step is when it becomes a legislative issue, and that's when it comes back to the council. So we really do try to separate the administration and the legislation so that there's clarification that administration makes a recommendation to the council, to the committee of the whole first, but the committee of the whole and the city council set as the legislative body. So thank you.
From the dais, anyone else? From the audience, anyone? You've been doing this for 11 years now, Dick?
12.
God help us.
Yep.
You haven't aged a day.
Yes, I have, believe me.
Well, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work.
Good job, Dick.
Thanks.
I think you hit the nail on the head with being very diplomatic. Sometimes the greatest obstacle is not necessarily the volume of information required, it's the quality of the information submitted.
Absolutely.
I mean, the old days when people would say, well, here's what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
Looks good.
Yeah. Yeah. Not anymore.
Not anymore. Item four, ladies and gentlemen, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments tonight offered by any member of the council? Item five is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine. Any item that any member of the council wishes to add and or ask for additional information can be done at this time or from an audience member as well.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
You want to take something off?
Yes, sir.
Okay, as I thought. I wasn't certain what I thought you were just.
Yep, no.
I'm not sure.
Just trying to get your attention.
Okay, got it. Which item, Mr. Paul?
Oh, I'm sorry. Under reports, you want the exact economic, administrative services, police department, and public works.
All those?
Those that I identified, yeah.
Public works, police department, economic development department, and administrative services.
Correct.
Got it. Is there a motion to approve the omnibus agenda as amended?
So moved.
Motion by Pawlak.
Second.
Second by Alderman Flanagan. Mr. Clerk, would you be so kind as to take the roll?
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
We jump down to item 7. Item 7 is reports. The first report removed from item 7 is the Administrative Services Department report. This was removed by Alderman Pollack. Alderman Pollack, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mayor. May I address Mary?
Oh, of course. Please Thanks. Do.
Mary, in your report, you identified the furlough days, and you mentioned 15 employees have taken approximately 35 days, with many of them being electric division employees who have agreed to take the 4 mandatory furlough days over the course of the year. How many electric department employees do we have that will be taking the mandatory 4 days? Roughly.
Alderman, if it's all right, I'll let Stephanie respond to that. She's the Director of Administrative Services, sure. Not myself, and it's her report, so I'll let her respond
sure.
to that.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you.
I'm thinking it's roughly 13 or 14. I don't have the exact number.
And then regarding the actual other city employees, in terms of response, you allude to that many of them are electric division employees. How is it going for the general staff, if you will?
Oh, I think we're having a good response. I just point out that so that people know that the electric are taking their furlough days as they had agreed to. I would say right now it's about half and half.
Okay. But so we'll see, quite a bit of savings yet this year.
We would hope so. If you look at last year, we did recognize quite a bit of savings, and that's why we continued the program this year.
Okay. Thanks. The next one, Mayor, was the economic development.
I'm going to ask the city attorney for some advice. Is it okay if we consider each of them separately, or do you want to do it one by one and re-approve them?
Well, so far, he's just asking for clarification, so I guess I would do it on Moss.
On Moss. On Moss it is. Mr. Pollack.
Thank you, sir. Next is the Economic Development Department report, where I believe, is Ellen here?
Oh, there's yes, someone. She is.
Ellen, you identify RFPs and where we have initiated contacts, and you provided us the history for the last couple of years where, to date, going back to 2008, it was 44 for the year total, 2009, 76, and this year, 32. Just getting a sense of where we're going and why we have initiated less contacts to date this year than we have in the previous years.
You're talking about the request for information section?
Yeah, that we've initiated.
Mm-hmm. It's a function of time. I mean, Paul spent 160 hours on that bicycle race, and that's one of his primary duties. Another element is Jamie's out on maternity leave, and I've been creating all the ads and updating the website. It's just a function of staffing and time.
So you need more people? What do you need?
The needs are several departments could use more people. So,
well, but I'm asking, what is it you need so that we can keep up with being out on the street and initiating contact? I mean, I understand you're busy, but what can we do to help you?
I need to clone myself. I'm sorry to be flippant. Yeah, we could, for what we're doing in terms of the tourism work and the TIF work and the industrial recruitment and the downtown work, that's why we've asked to try to extricate ourselves a bit from some of the downtown promotions and events,
right?
Because they're very time intensive.
Right.
Yeah.
And I recognize certainly times are very difficult, and appreciate what you do. And that's what drew my attention was that is, you know, what can we do to help you? Because I see that I don't want to say your productivity is down, but we see that you're busy. But
yeah, some of those too, we monitor trade journals that list businesses that are looking to expand. And we don't respond to all. For example, if we've got 3 in a category, we're not going to go out and try and solicit them. So there is some ebb and flow on that. If there's some really good prospects that come before us. Like last week, we went to the International Council Shopping Center's luncheon in Chicago. So Paul will have a lot of follow-up. Paul and I both went. And we'll have probably 5 to 10 retailers that we're going to make contact with based on that. We were able to talk to several of them in a seminar, an open forum type session afterwards.
Okay.
But yeah, it's mainly manpower.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
I had a question for the police department regarding the red light report, which was interesting. And Mayor, who should I direct that to in the absence of Chief Mexum?
Well, Mary McKittrick certainly reviews that information, so if she's not prepared to answer it, we can certainly get the information.
Sure. Just a question, because I didn't see anything in there regarding accident reduction. Now, that was such a big deal when this was contemplated. I didn't see that in the report.
It is, and that is the premise of the photo enforcement cameras, but you recall they just went into effect in March, so we really don't have the trend data as of yet. You are receiving a quarterly report when the county receives it as well, and as that data builds, then that information will be included as well. But right now it just hasn't been in place long enough to actually have trend data.
Right, and I think that, and I certainly understand that, in terms of the statistical analysis that's needed to identify what's going on out there. But I think it'd be good for the public to know that not only are we, you know, ticketing 3,000 people, but we're seeing what's actually going on in terms of accidents, which is one of the reasons that that was presented to us for the implementation of red light.
Can I just correct you? We're not ticketing 3,000 people. 3,000 people are running a red light.
Well,
right. I mean, am I right?
Well, the report indicates that we've issued 3,000 citations.
Of 3,000 people are breaking a law and running a red light.
I'm just repeating what it said.
Okay.
It said.
I'm just making sure I'm clarifying that.
Yeah. So thanks. And thank you, Alderman Piper, for pointing
sure
out.
Sure thing. I'm just trying to help.
And lastly, Mayor, is the Public Works report.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see Dan.
Joe Stanton can answer any questions you might
have. Regarding, sure. You know, as I go through I went through the capital project summary, you know, it looks like to date we're, you know, we've budgeted quite a bit of funds, the projected budget that is, and the amounts that were awarded, you know, we're closely approaching saving approximately $1 million. So that apparently, or that does look good for us. One of the last items I saw was the Prairie State project, and the contractor is Bechtel. Project starts 7/1/2007, project finish 9/1/2012. It says new EPC contract signed. lists some dates of completion for Unit 1, Unit 2. And then it says mine on schedule and under budget. I guess what I would like to know is, what is the actual budget, and what did the contract call for in terms of material changes? Because we're now being asked to contribute as a whole for the entire project, not just Geneva, but all the participants, greater than $1 billion. So I don't understand the wording as to how we're under budget and what authorities or authorities don't we have under the contract regarding the change for the dollar amount.
We don't have a contract, Alderman Pollack, with Bechtel. That's NMPA. We are a member of NMPA.
Correct.
And they, the organization, has the contract. So it's NMPA's responsibility to oversee that. And as you know, we've discussed, they have been doing that. The contract, as it stands right now, I believe, from recollection, is $3.99 billion. Dollars, which is what they're referring to. Change orders, we don't see those. Bechtel, Prairie State, they handle those, and those don't go to NMPA. Those don't go to the individual investors in NMPA. If you're interested, I suppose, if you're going to be going to the Prairie State visit next month, I'm sure that we can arrange for someone to talk to us about change orders, if you're interested in those details.
Well, sure. You know, the $3.99 billion is just for the powerhouse itself. You know, the total overall is in excess of $5 billion, and the way I read it, it's, you know, the change order or the increase is $1 billion.
Is for the power plant, not the mine.
I'm confused.
The change, the EPC, was for the power plant.
Correct.
Not the mine. That's a different project.
Right. Yeah, but the overall project, the transmission lines, the power plant, the mine, in totality, is greater than $5 billion.
Correct.
Right.
That's correct.
And I was just, and I know the contract is not us specifically, Geneva, but we are the ones who, if we had to, we would have to be financially responsible for the bonds, correct?
All of the investors would be.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. What I was just looking for is there anything in that contract that talks about a material change, whereas this council would have to, again, address the issue, because we're going to have to increase the bonds that we are without NIMPA that we are ultimately responsible for.
Is there anything in the contract?
Is there anything in that contract that says if there's a material change that it would have to come back to this body for consideration?
No, that's our agreement with NIMPA, and then there's a separate contract that NIMPA has.
I understand that. But what I'm asking, Mary, is there something in that contract between us and NIMPA that talks about a material change? So in essence, the price could be $10 billion, and we would have no say-so?
Well, the EPC puts a cap on that. As you know, we discussed that a couple of times.
Right.
I think you were there at one of the meetings in closed session, and we talked about that. But there is a cap that's put on that, and it's a cap. So it won't go beyond that 3.99 for the power plant. That's part of the new contract that was negotiated.
So 3.99 is
the cap.
The max.
Correct. For the power plant, yes.
For the power plant.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alderman Dantino.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Of course.
I wasn't on the city council when that project was approved. What was the original amount? Because I was looking back in some of the old minutes. I thought it said $2 billion, or at one point even said $2 million, but I think that was a typo.
And I apologize. I wasn't directly involved at that time, but based on my recollection, there was a range at the time, and the upper range was $3.8 billion at that time. I don't recall what the lower range was, but I recall the upper range was $3.8 billion.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else on any of the reports that have been addressed? If not, entertain a motion to approve those reports as submitted.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Pawlak.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Thank you. Roll call, Mr. Clerk.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Greg Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Mary Pawlak.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Item 10, municipal bills for payment. Mr. Clerk, kindly read the bills to be paid.
Bills for payment total $874,282.97.
The Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read and as displayed on the city website.
Second.
Alderman Brown motions to pay the bills as read and displayed on the city website. Alderman Flanagan makes the second. Questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, the roll call, please.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pawlak.
Aye.
Robert Piper. Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Point of order. I don't believe my name was called.
I'm sorry. Bob Singer.
Sorry.
My apologies.
Aye.
Thank you.
Motion passes unanimously. Despite the clerk's attempt, we jump down to Committee of the Whole Items of Business. Item number 11A, consider ordinance number 2010-34, amending Title 10, Chapter 1, Section 10.1. 10-1-2, Enforcement Officer of the City of Geneva and the City Code.
So moved.
Alderman Brown makes the motion.
Second.
Alderman Singer makes the second. This item was voted 6-2 at the committee meeting. Is there anyone wishing to address this matter tonight? Alderman Pawlak.
Thanks, Mayor. Just one quick question. Is the position building commissioner and code enforcement officer, or just building commissioner?
Well, it's building commissioner and zoning enforcement officer.
Right. That way, we're changing that.
To?
Because we have a separate code enforcement officer.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's building commissioner.
It's in the code right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So
the title would be building commissioner.
Just building commissioner.
Correct.
And then who would then be the code enforcement officer?
We already have a code enforcement officer.
That'd be Forney? Current occupant officer, Jim Forney.
Okay. So they would be separate.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Item 11A. We have a motion. We have a second. Anyone from the audience? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Nay.
Ray Pollock?
Nay.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Motion passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 nay votes. Motion carries. Item 11B is to consider the Mill Race Cyclery request to use the city parking lot adjacent to their building at 11 East State Street from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on August 18th, 2010.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Flanagan, seconded by Marks. This was unanimously supported at the committee level. Any additional questions or comments? I'm sure we can catch our student halfway to Champaign. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollock?
Aye.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
According to my records, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hop down to item 15, new business, before we adjourn for closed session. Any new business from any members of the audience this evening about anything at all? I can hear you breathing out there. Ellen DeVita, welcome back.
I just want to remind folks that the Geneva Concours d'Elegance is this Sunday, and it is a one-of-a-kind, free Concours event on the streets of downtown Geneva.
What's the weather forecast?
Very, very good.
What's the time?
From 10 to 4.
10 to
and they'll 4. Be setting up early if people want to come and watch that a little bit.
That's cool.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Ellen. From the dais? Mrs. McKittrick?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to remind the council and also the audience that we do have 2 Committee of the Whole meetings coming up. We have a regularly scheduled Committee of the Whole next week, August 23rd, and then we also have added a special Committee of the Whole for Monday, August 30th. So I just wanted to point that out to everyone.
And who is chairing the August 23rd meeting?
That would be me. That would be myself, Mayor.
We're back to Mr. Pollock? God, we've been through it all once already.
Should be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Cool out, man. Anyone else? New business at all? I have a couple items.
Wait a minute.
Oh, forgive me.
I hate to say this, but I think someone skipped me. Can I be skipped?
Hell no, you can't be skipped.
We all would have tried to pull that card.
You and Paul, I got an arm wrestle for it.
I also have not yet had my turn.
I was looking for this.
Well, if the good lady from the
Fourth Ward
would like to ascend to the throne of
Gene has the master schedule downstairs. I don't know.
Bertha, you're more than welcome.
We'll figure it out and send an email.
Only if it's a short meeting. I'm just teasing.
We all said that, too.
Mark did a hell of a job last week. Notice he doesn't have a tie on tonight.
I did it last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Dantino.
Is forgettable.
That was so memorable.
So memorable.
August 9th was Ray Pollock. That's August 23rd, Dorothy Flanagan. August September 13th.
We're off a week. That's why.
And that's what's Charles Brown, and the 27th is Ron Singer.
That's the other Mark's brother.
That's right. I like it.
So it's Pollock, Flanagan, Brown, Singer, and
okay, so it's Pollock. He's
but
doing
if Dorothy, ladies first,
no,
you
no,
want
no,
to
no,
go.
No, no, no.
Then you're after him.
Yeah, we can battle this out off camera. So,
no battling.
We do have good news, though, and I'm certain Mr. Pollock's aware of this. We have 2 medalists who competed in Singapore this week at the inaugural Youth Olympic Games, Kevin McDowell, and, of course, who won the silver medal, mm-hmm. and Kelly Whitley, who won the bronze, both going to be seniors at Geneva High School. They compete later this week. I'm not certain the exact day in the relay, so we'll keep our eyes peeled as well.
Pretty amazing.
It's phenomenal. And if you hop on YouTube, you can actually they feature the Youth Olympic Games on YouTube today. Hop on YouTube, you can see the beginning of the women's triathlon. It's fascinating. 32 kids from around the world. Amazing. Yeah, amazing. And Pete Collins, if you can help me out, I want to show everybody this picture. Pete's going to do a close-up of this, and you guys, I want you to take a look. I'm going to bring this into closed session with us. This is Alderman Bob Piper.
Yeah.
In full Harley-Davidson regalia, visiting the mayor of Sturgis.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I'd bring you something back. I know you.
It's
like
an autographed picture of Bob.
I thought you would like that.
Building bridges. Love
Building
Bob Piper.
Bridges with the mayor's.
Isn't that amazing? Look at the tattoos Alderman Piper has.
Did Alderman Piper propose a noise ordinance on motorcycles too?
Yeah.
This is why we do Red Ribbon Week.
That's right. Right there.
Right there. So enjoy. A motion to adjourn to closed session to review closed session minutes.
So moved.
Motion by Singer, seconded by.
Yeah, it's been an hour and a half.
I'll do it.
Mr. Hill.
I'm looking for you.
Voice vote sufficient. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
There will be no action taken afterward. There will be action. Forgive me. We'll be back in about 10 minutes, tops.
Please, yeah.
here.
I'll entertain a motion, ladies and gentlemen, to return to open session.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Singer. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And I will yield the floor to the esteemed alderman from the second ward, Alderman Richard Marks.
Go ahead, Bob.
Esteemed? I was looking at Piper.
I'll make a motion to release the minutes of the closed sessions from November 20th, 2006, the full minutes from the February 16th, 2010, and the partial of the July 26th, 2010.
Second.
Motion by Marks to release the minutes as so stated, seconded by Alderman Singer. Questions or comments?
I think just for clarification, Mr. Mayor, there is a document that lists those with the subject matter, so there's full clarification.
And that'll be included in the official record as well. Questions or comments? Is voice vote sufficient? We prefer roll call.
Roll call.
Roll call. Mr. Clerk.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollack.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Alderman Flanagan.
Oh, I just wanted to make sure. I know that we already passed over new business, but I forgot to mention that the chamber, Buffalo Wild Wings Bar and Grill is giving 10% of all the food purchases today. I think you still have time. And August 23rd, and those 10% of the food purchases, if you get a certificate, goes to offset the cost for the Geneva Swedish Days Festival Parade. And I forgot to mention that.
We could have sped up the meeting.
Yeah, maybe. Everybody would have left for the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
good
stuff.
It's only 10% on the food.
Only 10%. We heard that, Don. The mic was on, by the way, so thanks for slamming one of those Randall Road businesses. We appreciate it. I'm just kidding you. Pete, edit the tapes. Anything else, ladies and gentlemen? I feel like Nixon. Edit the tapes. Motion to adjourn is in order.
So moved.
Motion by Piper, seconded by Marks. All in favor to adjourn, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Good night, everyone.
Aye, Chuck.